Mark Johnson has been a guest on this program before. If you think in terms of the clawhammer style banjo playing, Mark Johnson has developed a style that is so unique it's adopted the name of clawgrass, and actually comes from the very first album that he did entitled Clawgrass, but it's a very kind of a distinctive style. He definitely has an old-time feel to what he plays. He's a very, very famous student. I don't mean in the sense that he sat in the same room and taught him, but someone who's learned so much from Mark Johnson, accelerated his style of playing into what he believes it is today, is Steve Martin, and both of them will tell you that. Mark Johnson has a new album coming out from Mark soon. Can't wait for that one. I'm really happy to have back a friend of mine, Mark Johnson. Welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, Mark. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, Steve, it's so great to be back again. This is what our third, second.
It's been a couple. I don't know. It's been a while, over a couple years, and it's just like old times.
You know, you guys in professional radio, especially in bluegrass radio, are the reason why I even exist. When I first started out, I had no idea how to do things. I did some guerrilla marketing back when I showcased up in Owensboro back in 95. And I called Lee Michael Dempsey up and I said, can you give me a list of the top 100 bluegrass DJs? I got about 67 of them sent, and I contacted every one of them. And I learned that these are professional people like yourselves who just do this because they love it and they weren't getting any recognition back then at all. And I would just bend over backwards to bring their names up in shows. Now we've got famous people like you with a famous name after doing one of the best bluegrass shows I've been around. Congratulations.
I'm still going to record this. You don't have to do that. We're still
gonna... That's the truth.
I appreciate it. You're very kind. Mark, let's do a little bit, since it's been a while. I know you're working on a new album. We'll talk about that, and you and your partner, Emery. But let's talk a little bit about clawgrass so that people get there's bluegrass, there's old-time playing, and somewhere in the middle or somewhere there's a hybrid, and that's Mark Johnson's clawgrass. Let's just talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the new things you're working on.
Sure. Can you tell me where to start?
Well, I mean, it's you have to describe it. It's not just the old-time. It's not frailing. It's not three-finger style, which most of the audience would associate with Earl Scruggs, but what's the feature? I'm not saying one feature. There's many things to it. There's touch and style and approach to what you're doing, but clawgrass has a definite sound and a connotation when people talk about it. They know they're talking about Mark Johnson, and it's a style that you sort of, you came up with it, and that's why we call it clawgrass.
Well, it's not the first time I've been asked this question. The answer that I give people is that clawgrass is the title of an album that I did with the Rice Brothers and Friends. We recorded it down in Gainesville, Florida, and at Tony Rice's home in Crystal River, Florida, in 1992, Christmas time, actually. And we recorded it over 4 days, and when we were talking to a friend of mine named Ray Vallow, who owned the studio, we were kicking names around, and I kept thinking, clawgrass, blue hammer. We almost called it blue hammer.
Blue hammer. I like clawgrass better, pal.
Yeah, you know, that's what we settled on. So it was the title of an album. And then people started, what happened was, over the years, because it was affiliated with the Rice Brothers, promoters would actually listen to me for, 10 seconds when I would call them up, see if I could get booked. Hi, I'm Mark Johnson, click. I'm Mark Johnson. I just did a CD with the Rice Brothers called Clawgrass. and they go, with the Rice Brothers called Clawgrass? Click. And that's how it started, and it took on a life of its own. All of a sudden, it started getting out there, like in IBMA, the Carkendales up there, it got a highlight, in their CD review section.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the radio stations, I was sending that stuff out to the radio stations that they're so important to me back then. They helped me out so much. And then it just started building. And the magazine article, Bluegrass Now magazine, the folks, Debbie up at Bluegrass Now, and Steve, an acoustic musician, two magazines on around.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
The Cockendolls, their daughter Sharon, when she was heading up the magazine. Oh, we've been, they sent the cover of Bluegrass Unlimited in, I forget which month it was, but in the year 1998, I shared a cover with Tony Trischka and Bobby Hicks.
Hmm.
And that's when it really got it going. And what happened, it just kept building with radio interviews and TV shows and performances and magazine cover stories and articles, newspaper articles. And the people who were writing about me didn't know what to call the style. So they called it clawgrass.
Okay.
And I never thought it was any different than just, I thought I played old-time banjo. But I wasn't playing old. And I, for the longest time, I didn't understand. It wasn't until David Holt, that Jay Unger taught me how to frail back when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
The great fiddler. But David Holt was a big hero, too. And they all did liner notes on that old clawgrass album. He brought me up to Mount Airy, North Carolina, my first time going to an old-time festival. And he goes, Mark, I'm out here with a film crew. We're going to be walking around doing some film. Why don't you just have yourself a good time? I go, okay. So I take my dad's in this. I hear this big collective, beautiful sound coming from down the field. All these people are gathering around. And they're all playing together, beautiful old mountain sounds, fiddle and banjo. Fiddlers are in charge. And they're calling the melody. And I got in there and started playing, and I started doing what I was doing. And they folded up their cases and walked away.
Nobody liked Mark Johnson.
I was so embarrassed. I couldn't believe it. I went back and sat down. And Dave came back to talk to me, and he goes, what are you doing? I told him what happened. He goes, oh, you went down to that end of the field? Mark, that's the preservation end of the field, where they're preserving the old sounds. He says, you don't play old-time, Mark. You got your own sound. He says, you need to get out of that other end of the field down there like that. And that's kind of the first time I picked up on it. Tony said the same thing early on in the liner notes on the clawgrass thing. Where that sound came from, I don't read a note of music. I'm dyslexic. I have learning disabilities as a kid. And I just hear sound. And I would make my own music. I would just find notes and create patterns based on the frailing technique that Jay Unger had taught me. I was teaching myself Scruggs at the same time, too. But when I got with Tony Rice, you can't just get in there and cram away playing old-timey sound, you know, like that right-hand pattern. It's a very, very, very steady pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to throw, it's not going to complement what he was doing. So I had to figure out, using bluegrass technique, of knowing whoever's up in that microphone, everybody else is working as a unit to make sure that person in the microphone is as great as they can. And that comes from hanging out with the Rice Brothers, that whole cornucopia of albums they were doing in the 80s, bluegrass album bands.
Oh, yeah.
Harry was recording. My first clawgrass song was recorded on Hurricanes and Daydreams with Larry Rice, the Brothers, the Virginia Squires, Mary Chapin Carpenter on it. But this is where it came from. It was applying all that ensemble playing, knowing how to play behind different instruments, note separation, playing lead, playing backup, playing harmonies, playing counter melodies, which is what Tony Rice was doing. That's one of those duets. There's a duet on that clawgrass album. It was the old tune called The Colored Aristocracy,
mm-hmm.
Key of D. And we just do this duet thing back and forth, and it's just, it's we're both talking to each other. That's what we were doing, and it's so much fun. And that's what Emery and I do to this day.
And Emery, by the way,
I'm sorry.
No. I want to talk about Emery. You've mentioned David Holt. David's been a guest on this program several times. I'm a big fan of what David Holt does and produces and preserves, and he's just a great guy for you to have.
That guy deserves whatever a Grammy just for being David Holt.
I agree with you.
He should have a category, the David Holt category.
That's right. I agree with you. I'm a big fan. A big fan. Every time I can get him on, I can. So we were about to talk about Emery Lester, who is your partner. You've done how many albums together?
We've done four albums together, and I've actually worked with him on a couple tunes on like his Cruising the Eight album. And then we're in the studios now, recording our fifth project together after being together for 20 years.
You have a very distinctive style, Mark, and with Emery, that's just a wonderful complimentary part to your music. But I hear whatever it was the one side of the field didn't want to hear, I hear what the other side appreciated. It is, you're right. It's something you've developed. It's recognizable, and it's always Mark Johnson. I call it clawgrass because we've talked about this before, that it has taken on this name that you know, it's you had a style that someone put a name to, but it's not like you were trying to invent that. But you have a very, which is, by the way, in my opinion, the mark of a great musician. You have a style that people can say that's Mark Johnson or Clawgrass style. That is something that no one can ever take away from you.
Steve Martin is just, I don't, you know, it's a very humbling thing. To this day, I never set out to do it. It just kind of happened. And, so many people have come into my life, like you and Tony Rice, just all the great musicians that heard something in what I was doing. And I'm so grateful and thankful for all the help at Deering. Oh, good Lord.
Deering, let's talk about Deering. First of all, you were talking about magazine covers. You just did appear again with Steve Martin on Banjo, the Banjo Newsletter album, so you're still getting cover shots.
Yeah, that was a pretty amazing thing on several levels. Don Nietzsche, that's another group that has been really big in promoting me from day one. Nancy Nietzsche and her sons Spencer and Don. And Don calls me up in January of this year, I'm 17, and he says, we're just doing a cover story on Steve Martin and his banjo playing, and he mentioned you several times throughout this article here, so we would like to also interview you. And we want to use a photo of the two of you at Steve's house the day that he got his Clawgrass model banjo, the Deering Mark Johnson Clawgrass model banjo. And I go, well, get permission from Steve first, please. And what happens, they wound up, they doctored the photo a little bit in the back just to kind of plot out things, but you get the, it's a great photo.
It is.
And I cannot, Steve Martin's just an amazing guy. He doesn't have to do what he does.
It's
just about.
For the people listening, I've gotten to know Steve Martin. He's been on the show 3 or 4 times. He's a wonderfully nice fellow, and he always says Mark Johnson's playing was like a light going off, and that's why he still comes back to you as this source that informed his playing style. And he also plays the Deering, which you play. But, I mean, we've talked about this story before, Mark, but Steve still, as of this most recent Banjo Newsletter, he recognizes Mark Johnson's input into all the years he was playing. It was like a watershed moment.
I was gobsmacked. I'm glad that he's happy with it. And look what he's doing. I mean, the guy is just out there creating some of the most gorgeous music. And that's another thing, too. Steve would kind of joke about it. He goes, you know, if you want me to play Foggy Mountain Breakdown or Clinch Mountain, I can't do that. And he says, I write music for myself.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I go, well, that's what I do. And I think that's one of the levels we connect now. But he's got so much to say on so many levels of the art world. You know, it's gone into Broadway plays. It's gone into private picking parties. You name it. It shows.
Novels.
Moved that banjo into so many different levels.
Oh yeah, he has. He has, and let's talk then about the Deering banjo, because he plays what you play professionally, and of course Deering is maybe the most dominant name in the banjo world. I mean, they've covered the market from entry level to the most high end exquisite models that can be made, engineered by some of the greatest players in the world, and with your input too on the banjo. I want to talk about the one that you play. I understand there is I don't want to say lesser, but a less ornate version. But let's talk about Deering for a minute, because they've also been instrumental in your career.
Sure. The Clawgrass model prototype came about back in 2006 is when I received it. And it came as such a shock. It was so ornate. It was so finely made. And it sounded, it's an orchestra-grade instrument. It's designed to play in full ensemble and be able to project, but also be able to play, you know, beautifully and slowly and quietly, too. It's just got so much range to it. The more you ask from it, the more it gives. Well, that first night that I met Steve Martin, I brought it with me. And he fell in love with it, too, so he says, yeah, I want one. Well, that was fun, too, calling the Deerings up and said, hey, guess what Steve Martin wants by the first one. And they went nuts, you know. And then from that, even it went further. Steve introduced me to several of his comedian friends, banjo players, too. Kevin Nealon
right.
is a banjo player, and he bought one. He bought the second one. And then Billy Conley's a killer flarhammer player. And he didn't buy one, but he just loves to play the band. He got a hold of one, and he said, oh, my God, this is great. I love it. And it just started taking off. It's a very high-end instrument. It's an expensive instrument, but it's very high-end. And my students, I teach a lot, and they just said, I love this banjo. I love this sound. We can't find anything out there that can come close to it. Gosh, I can't afford what it costs. But I went to the Deerings, and they were very receptive of it. We were getting ready to go over to Europe, too. Emery and I went to Europe in 2015, played a big tour over there. And I needed an instrument that I could take across the ocean and get back into customs with that CITES treaty thing.
And
they put their thinking caps on it. Yeah. Came up with this incredible, it's called the Clawgrass Number 2. And it's maybe a third of the price of the prototype. But I took those, the serial number 1 and serial number 2, to Europe with me and left the prototype home. And it just, we played concert halls. We played, you know, 10th century medieval castles out, you know, with huge crowds out in front. It just projected just as beautiful as anything.
And
a different sound.
Yeah, it is. And for the listeners, Mark, I would, a full resonator banjo for bluegrass, they're pretty heavy. A lot of banjos that people would normally associate with the old style or the claw hammer or what's now evolved in the clawgrass, but I mean that whole style, they're usually not that heavy and big. And I've picked up and noodled a little bit with what you're talking about. It's got a very deep shell on it, and it's got some heft to it. So that's when you were talking about being an orchestra grade instrument.
Well, it's all Bell Braun. It's got the Deering 06 tone ring, which is essentially a 20 hole flathead tone ring.
Hmm.
And it's made of walnut, so you get the brightness out of the wood with ebony. And that's pretty much the only materials you need to get the kind of sound I look for. The neck is custom on both the instruments. It's a wide, little wider neck, perceptibly wider. It doesn't really look wide when you look at it. You got to kind of hold it a little bit. All the way up, it's for playing claw hammer and playing roll patterns and lead high up the neck. And you can't do that on regular, even with crow wide space, spacing bridges, you have to have a little wider neck.
Yeah.
But the speed neck, too, it's a real fast neck on the back.
And that means the finish has been shaped. Basically, the finish has been eliminated from the back.
Yes.
Yeah. And you mentioned the treaty, and this is intriguing to me because it'll get back to the point of this newer version of your banjo. The treaty and this was a big deal, I think, with Martin and some of the wood. You mentioned the treaty going to Europe, and you were actually afraid that if some of the wood might be something violative of this treaty, and I think you call it, is it the CITES Treaty?
CITES Treaty, yeah. It's a World Organization treaty, a UN treaty that protects flora and fauna, you know, rare woods. It's what's protecting the Brazilian trees from being just completely harvested out of Brazil and things like that, but you know, when it gets down to the nuts and bolts of it, the guy who's getting paid $12 an hour at customs, you know, when you're coming in with your beautiful prototype Mark Johnson Deering Clawgrass banjo, and he looks at all the pearl on it, he's just going to, you know, because that's protected too, abalone and things like that. You know, he's just going to tell you to pull over like a traffic cop. And so that's another reason why we came up with that. So Greg and Janet came up, the materials are all the same in it, but the beautiful inlay, which is identical to what's on my prototype, is not. We're kidding about it. It's called mother of acrylic. but the fretboard is a green banjo, and it comes with a birth certificate. You don't have to stand there and explain it. Just hand them the birth certificate. Here's this where it came from, who it was made by, when it was made, what it's made out of. I'm the owner. Yeah.
And they play really well. I mean, I played around with yours. So let's say the model that you and we were at IBMA last year when I saw you last time in Raleigh, and the newer ones, they play very well. It's funny to me that treaty involving flora and fauna was at least a driving factor, not just the fact that your students wanted something that was more accessible to them, price-wise, but the fact that now this banjo that can be available. That plays very well, not as ornate, but it was also in part created because of the need to get back and forth across the ocean. That to me is just amazing.
But and you can look at that from any angle. The best part about it, it's a green, environmentally friendly banjo, and you can take it out. So that made me feel good too about that.
Yeah.
And, Certainly, I have Thrill number 1 and 2, and I think I mentioned this last year when we were talking about it. When we took them over to Europe, they didn't even know they were banjos. They were so brand new. And, you know, you usually got to play an instrument for a while to get it to open up.
Right.
It's just, they handled it. They just handled it. And they're selling quite well. The Germans are just amazing. Janet calls me and says, man, we got a lot of orders. We're stacked up out here. These things. I go, that's wonderful. All across cut glass for the Deering. It's just amazing.
They do. Deering banjo is just, they're everywhere. They're from every model, from beginners to the high end, like we said. But it's to me a happy coincidence that you were looking for this to help your students, and also because you couldn't travel with yours out of fear that a border guard may decide yours violates some treaty, and there's really not much you can do about
it. What I was really worried about was the U.S. Customs guy. Gets $12 an hour.
Yeah.
The one I was worried about.
Yeah.
They looked at it. You know, it's funny. We're going through Italian customs, and the banjos. I've got one of those extreme cases. They're kind of the exoskeleton light cases that you put your regular case down inside of.
Yeah.
Guy's ad on TV. It's a Taylor guitar one. He throws it off his garage.
Yeah.
Concrete.
Yeah. I've seen that.
But they look like little children's coffins. We go through Italian customs over there, and the guy comes out and he goes, "What are these?" I go, well, they're banjo. Goes, what is banjo?
Oh.
Banjo is a musical instrument. And he goes, musical instrument. But he looks at me quizzically again. I go, bluegrass music. And he really looks quizzical at me. I go, look at him. And I point down at my cowboy boots. I go, country music. He goes, country music. And he was really cool, too.
That's a great story. That's great. Well, you should have called up. You should have called Silvio Ferretti over in Italy and said, "Come over and help me explain what a banjo."
Any one of them, Martino, they would have come over and said, "Put him in jail."
They might have for a while. They might have for a while. Oh man, that's a great. You will let me know when the new album is ready. You'll let me know, and we'll come back and talk about the new one that you're working on with Emery right now. I assume there's no title for it or no real release date. You're just kind of in the studio putting together this next one.
Absolutely. We're going to try and get it out before in the summer sometime.
Okay.
Yeah. I know there's a process. You got to get, the pro touring bands get their albums done in the wintertime because they got to be out by a certain time.
Right.
Go through the process. We always miss out on those.
Hmm.
Yeah. We do it because we love it. We get it out there and try the best we can.
You let me know. I guess you'll probably have it. I will see you in Raleigh then, I guess, at the IBMA week down there, and certainly be out by then, I hope. But we'll talk about it. I may talk to you in Raleigh about it. We may pull aside somewhere and just do a quick interview on it.
Oh, that would be fun.
All right. Mark Johnson. Okay. Hey, Mark, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, just so the audience knows, we talked for probably 45 minutes before we started the tape rolling, so that's just the way it goes. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, what you're doing, Steve, with this amazing radio program you've got, and such a help to all the musicians out there, but it's a love that we all have, and I guess it's a love we all share.
Well, I appreciate that. Appreciate your time and all the music that you're giving to all of us to enjoy, and for the listeners, Unreal Bluegrass. I tell them all the time, the artists come on here because they know the audience gets it, and they'll be happy to hear from you. So, Mark Johnson.
Especially your audience.
Yep. You know what? I brag on them all the time, and I don't make a point of it, but I do think they're pretty hip, so they appreciate it. I will let you get back to your day, Mark, and we'll run into you down the road, and we'll definitely get back when the new album drops, all right?
Sounds good. I'll keep you up on it. And let me say one more thing to you.
Yeah.
Suggestion on an interview?
Yes, sir.
I want to interview Emery Lester.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
That would be an amazing interview.
That would be. Yes, please. Let him know, and we'll talk about that. And I would love to do that.
Send his contact information.
Okay, perfect.
It'd be an amazing interview.
I would love to do it. Thank you so much.
All right, my friend. You take care, and we'll talk soon.
All right, Mark Johnson, thanks for stopping by Unreal Bluegrass, and we'll run into each other, I guarantee you.
Okay.
See you, bye.